No.
Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to episode 8 of the BFG podcast. We are back. We got a pretty decent show for you today. We're going to talk some Christopher Robin, movie review that we just saw. We're going to talk some board games. Tyler, you played Tragedy Looper this weekend that I bothered you when you were trying to play. We're going to talk the new board game, Power Rangers Heroes of the Grid, that was announced on Kickstarter that both of us are very excited for.
Yes, for different reasons.
Different reasons. I'm going to talk about Walker Stalker Con, which actually something good happened that I like that I hope will continue in the future, probably just for a minute. And then we're going to talk about the retro game market. So a little bit of a condensed size, but still a decent show overall. So Tyler, what is going on with you? What is new in your world today?
So I think we had mentioned in the last podcast about how I had gotten a position at a school.
Yes.
And without going into too much detail, because I've been telling the same story to a lot of people and it just kind of drags on, but for a few different reasons, I ended up not being at the new school that I was supposed to work at. And I mean, there was nothing, it wasn't like a bad thing. The principal and I are still on very good terms, and she ever said, if you want the position here, or if you just need a reference or something, just let me know. It wasn't like a bad situation or something, you know, where bad things went down. It was a really good, really mutual thing. But there were just a few different factors to why I decided not to work there. And then, so I went back to the school where I was working at, the extended day program where I was working, for like our pre-school meeting. So it was the Friday before school started, and we were sitting there with the extended day people going over stuff. And I started having people saying, you know, like, hey, you need to go see the principal. The principal wants to talk to you. The principal wants to see you. And I had like three people come up to me and tell me that I was supposed to go up there. And I also had a couple missed calls and text messages from people saying the principal's been all over campus looking for you. And I went in there and she offered me a position at the school where I've been for like almost a decade now. So that was really great. And we're waiting for, basically what they do is they take the first 10 days to get a count of how many students are in attendance and how many of them, you know, their specific, like RTIs, 504s, things like that, which are basically just exceptions that we make for students, that need a little bit of extra help. And the position I'm up for is the ESE position, which would be, more or less a glorified tutor. I'm going to be taking students with like 504s and IEPs and things like that and pulling them out and working with them either in small groups or one-on-one to try to help them in ways that maybe, you know, try to teach them in ways that maybe they don't get in a large group classroom. And I think it really is a blessing because I think it's one of those where I like playing around with different styles and strategies. I've made like kind of like escape room type games for classes, and I've worked with like the guidance counselors at the school on games and things. And I've done a lot with technology. I've made like different like technology games and programs and things like that to help with the students. So I think the more I thought about it after she proposed the position to me, the more I started thinking this might be perfect. This might be everything that I've wanted in a job, because I can take these like kind of unique ideas and different strategies and test them out to see if they're effective with individual students. So I'm really excited about that. So hopefully within probably next week, probably about a week from now, I'll know if I'm going to get the spot for sure. But that should be I should be starting that position in a week or two. So
that's been
my big news since the last podcast.
So still, that's amazing to get into. You know, we graduated college. I was the same high school. We graduated college at the same time. So getting you in there, getting you started, really, you know, we graduated in May of 2018 this year.
Yeah.
And for you to jump right into a fall to start being a teacher, that's awesome, especially with how many people try to do this teacher stuff and, you know, for as long as you've been doing it. So.
And two, we're kind of in a, I don't want to say a bad spot, but we're having some like financial stuff going on just like district wide right now, because just with everything going on in the news, all the, you know, all the horrible things, you know,
unfortunately, yes.
Shootings and things like that. And it's just horrible stuff. And so the entire district has put out like a mandatory security officers.
Right.
And so all the schools had to hire security offers for every 1,000 students. So there has to be at least one security officer on every campus, and some of them have like two or three, depending on, you know, the bigger campuses. And so we had to hire a bunch of those, and we've got a huge surplus of teachers right now. And so whenever we graduated, they said, you probably won't get a spot right away. They said, we're in a really tough spot, and we're kind of in a hiring freeze right now. So, you know, don't be surprised if you don't get a full-time position right away. And so the fact that I had, not even that I got a position, but that I was able to get a position and then leave and get a new, even better position that, right, like, fits me better and my comfort levels, I think that was really a blessing.
Absolutely. And again, just as long as you've been at that school, that obviously shows how much they trust you, they see what you've done, and they wanted to keep you around long term. So, yeah. Working hard does help. A lot of people say, you know, it's who you know, whatnot, but it's also what you've done for them and how long you've been there and the commitment that you show, which obviously you have. So that's why they made probably one of their best decisions. The other best decision they're going to make is when they offer your lovely wife, Haven, a job over there too. So we got half of it. So we got half of it done. So Haven will come very soon, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Very, very soon.
But no, so that was a huge deal for me because I've been so happy at that school. And if they will let me, I'll just stay at that school until I retire. I love the school that I'm at, and I love what I'm doing there. And if they'll let me stay there, I would stay there, and that's where I would love to be until I retire, if they'll have me. So the fact that they offered me the position was just a huge blessing. I'm so happy that I have the opportunity to stay there.
Absolutely. So good job again to you. Obviously, we talked about that off podcast because we do talk to each other outside of this podcast. It's not like we just see each other for a couple of hours every other week and that's it. Maybe a movie. We do talk to each other, I promise.
Most of the time, though, like here in the podcast, I think is probably when we get along the best.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Maybe it's because we're trying to like kind of bounce off each other and like, you know, do these conversations for other people, because it's like,
yeah,
normally when we meet up outside of podcast times, it's basically just us making fun of each other and being mean to each other,
pretty much,
either in real life or through texting. So this is
pretty much,
you get I think the best side of both of us whenever we're podcasting, because we try to tone down the aggressive sarcasm and insult humor.
We do.
Just, I feel like we do. Maybe not as much as I think. But
just wait till we get to Power Rangers Heroes of the Grid. Then we're going to... You'll see.
You're such a nerd.
I am. Anyway, so anything else you wanted to add before I kind of fill in a little bit about like the 2 seconds that I've been doing the past 2 weeks?
I don't think so. The other thing that I'm really excited about over the last couple of weeks is the board games. But we're going to cover those later.
Yes, those are coming right up.
So I think...
Review.
I think the new position, the new job, was like my big news for the last couple of weeks.
All right, so what's going on in my world? So I've done 2 things this past weekend.
Ooh,
oh, yes.
I do have one more quick thing.
Of course.
So if you're watching, you can see this. Mike got me the new Hyperkin Duke controller, which is, if you're familiar with it, it's the original Xbox controller. The company Hyperkin recreated it for like universal compatibility. They recreated it as a USB controller.
Right.
And they had released it a while back, just almost precisely to spec of the original. And then they released a limited edition green one. And Mike picked up the green one for me.
Just because it was there, we had to do it.
Yeah, there were like 2 of them left at GameStop whenever we were there. And so he picked me up the limited edition green one. And so if you're watching it on YouTube, you can see this. If you're listening in,
we're holding it up to the camera.
Yeah. If you're listening in, it is it's almost exactly to spec, the same like size and buttons and everything.
It really is. Everything looks great on it.
Yeah. It looks like perfect of the original Xbox controller. Not like the redesign, but like the original fat one, the one that shipped with the consoles that was like way too big for most people's hands. And I love it because I've got like giant man hands, and this is just like amazing. I loved this controller whenever I first got my Xbox, and when I would play at friends' houses, this was just like, I loved this controller. I fell in love with it. And I've never found, I mean, you know, they keep revising them and making them slicker. And I love like the 360 and the Xbox One controllers, but I've got a real soft spot for the original Xbox controller. And I love that I've got one I can play on PC now.
Absolutely. The
only thing they've changed is they added a couple buffers. They added these tiny little buffer triggers to the top. But that's the only, like, perceptible change I can see in it. Besides the fact that, and again, you're going to miss out if you're not watching, but the center Xbox logo, on the original Xbox, it was just a big old, like, I'm assuming a plexiglass or something like that logo.
It was like a plexi plastic.
Yeah, it was like a plastic logo that said Xbox. And on this one, it's a mini LCD screen that actually plays the original Xbox logo as when you press it. And that's all it does.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, you
can't. That's a cool throwback.
You can't use it in games. The button doesn't do anything else. It's not even a programmable button. But it's just a button that plays the Xbox boot up screen every time you press it. And it's not there for like functionality. It's just like a cool like nostalgia thing, and I love it. And I keep pressing it. I can't stop. But anyway, that's
which is why it's sitting up here with us now.
Yeah, because I reinstalled the first Fable last night. I was playing Fable last night with my Duke controller, so that was pretty great.
Going back to 2002,
something like that.
I want to say. Yeah, okay.
But yeah, no, so that was a really good feeling, playing Fable again with my Duke controller.
Going back, early 2000s. So let's see, what's going on in my world now? So I'm just going to go through real quick, because one of them is a topic. Last Saturday, I was in Orlando with my wonderful mother. We actually went to Walker Stalker Con, which is a Walking Dead show. Got to meet the wonderful Kari Payton, who's actually, he's super nice. Like, he actually took some time to talk to everybody. And he does King Ezekiel, and he also voices Cyborg in Teen Titans, mm-hmm. both the original show in the early 2000s to Teen Titans Go. I got to meet Mr. Carl Grimes, Chandler Riggs, and I also met Thomas Paine does Jesus. But there's going to be something else I want to talk about that actually was a good thing, at least that I saw when we get down to that. And it'll only be like a 2-minute topic, but I'll save it for that. And then literally the day after, I had a toy show here in Jacksonville. And, did very well, a lot better than I thought. You know, we doubled our space this time, and I got to move out a lot of stuff. So instead of doing 3 trips like I needed to do from my storage to the show, I only needed to do 2 to put stuff away because I was able to get rid of so many things and condense. Tyler, thank you again, you're only supposed to come for maybe like a half hour, give or take, drop off some Pokemon stuff. And you ended up staying for a little over 2 hours because I was slammed.
Because what we've kind of worked out a little side business of our own. Like, he does it more, right now you're kind of doing it as your main thing.
Yes, this is my main thing.
Until you find something new.
Yes.
He does different conventions, and he runs an eBay store and things like that. And I kind of just do, like, tech and hardware stuff as a hobby on the side whenever I'm not at the school. And so we worked it out so that I'll do, like, kind of the legwork as far as fixing and repairing. I'll do like some cleaning up of consoles and games and things like that. And I've been swapping out the batteries in Pokemon games and things like that so that people can, we can resell them and keep playing them.
Yes.
So that's kind of been our side thing recently been fixing up a bunch of Pokemon games so that he can sell them at conventions and things. And he's been reimbursing me
through
food or retro games or whatever I need at the time.
Mostly food.
Yeah, mostly food.
So, you know, it works out that way. So that shows that we also somewhat get along outside of this show.
I fix things for him and then he takes me out on a date.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to complain. So anyway, so that was pretty much my last week. Other than that, I really haven't had a lot going on, just kind of trying to get through August, which we'll talk about this more in September, but really September 1st for me starts the holidays, especially the holiday glutton of games coming out. It was right in, and you know, we're going to talk about more of this in September, you know, 2 games right away is going to be Spider-Man and Tomb Raider.
And we're trying... I don't know if
Not yet. We may have a surprise coming in a few weeks.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it here.
Yeah. I don't know if it's confirmed yet, but we might have
something.
Yeah.
We might have something for you guys. It has to do with Spider-Man. That's your hint. So yeah, we're just trying to get through August right now. Probably in the next show I'll talk a little bit about Power Rangers 25th anniversary as well as the anniversary special that's coming. But yeah, that's pretty much all that's been going on with me. Just last Saturday and Sunday were kind of hectic, which is great because, you know, I got to get out and do some things. Mm-hmm. And then just made it through the week and now we're here for another episode of the BFG Podcast. So yeah. I guess the introductions are done, so let's jump right into our lone movie review.
I don't know about you. I'm super stoked for the new Spider-Man movie. Like
the
Spider-Verse one?
Spider-Verse one. Yeah, that actually looks really good. Sony looks like they're onto something.
Yeah, like, I really, really love the art style. I think they've really captured the look of, like, a comic book. Absolutely. And I really like the vibe of it. Not even so much like the actual, like what I see going on. As far as plot, I still need a little bit of convincing. But just based on like art style alone, I think I'm sold. I at least want to see it.
Yeah, I mean,
because it looks gorgeous.
It looks really nice.
Is it called Into the Spider-Verse?
Into the Spider-Verse. You know, I like how it's got that comedy to it. It looks like it's going to have both Peter and Miles in it, at least to my knowledge, which to me is awesome.
And Gwen is Spider-Girl.
So
there's going to be a whole lot of good Spider-Man stuff if the movie turns out well.
Hopefully. Sony will give you a chance with that one. So, right into our first movie review. Even though we're kind of a little bit late, but that's okay. So we saw Christopher Robin the other day.
We did?
We did see Christopher Robin.
Okay.
I've got some mixed thoughts on it, mixed feelings. I don't know about you. Obviously, I think anybody will say at one point in their life that they are a Winnie the Pooh fan in some way, shape, or form. For me, I thought it was a very good film. You know, I had some cute moments. I had some funny moments, too. Going kind of light on spoilers on this one, so you don't have to blurt out a bunch of stuff. There was the first act of the movie, I thought, when Christopher Robin goes to the 100 Acre Woods to help Pooh with something. To try to find something. I'm trying not to spoil it. To try to find something. Unless I missed something, it really wasn't explained what happened. I mean, a little bit was kind of explained, but it's just like, okay, they just all kind of... I don't know how to say it without spoiling. I'm going to try to go very light of spoilers on this one. They just... Something happened where some things disappear, and it's kind of mentioned a little bit of what happened. But it's never like fully.
I don't think it's really like spoiler territory, because if you've seen the trailer for it,
I mean, it does say it in the trailer.
If you've seen the trailer for the movie, they basically it shows adult Christopher Robin going back to the 100 Acre Wood to try to find all of the characters that he used to love,
his friends,
and then it kind of transitions, and you see in the trailer that he has gone back, he has come back to kind of the real world. And the characters follow him back out of the 100 Acre Wood into our world. They do a lot of setup. It's a slow movie. It's a little bit slower than I thought it would be. It kind of takes a while to get where it's going. And I kind of like that, because I feel like it feels like the leisurely, kind of the relaxed atmosphere that most of the Winnie the Pooh movies and books had.
Oh, absolutely. And I think...
I think the pacing of it was really good, but...
See, the big thing I liked about it, and what helped, even though it was a little bit slow, was the characters in it. Mm-hmm. Like, Jim Cummings back as Winnie the Pooh. I mean, you can't have anybody else do Winnie the Pooh. Like, Winnie the Pooh, the character itself, was written perfectly, I thought. Even Tigger, Piglet, Eeyore, I thought, was, like, the star of the show.
Yeah, Eeyore was great.
Eeyore was great. And then, you know...
The only one... So, watching the movie, I felt like everyone got captured really well, except maybe Rabbit.
Rabbit was not himself.
The voice was a lot different. And obviously, it was just a different voice actor, but...
Absolutely.
The voice was a lot different, but it felt like, even just, like, characteristically, it felt like he... I mean, it was similar, but it felt like he even, like, behaved and talked a little bit differently than he
really
used
did.
To.
That wasn't the Rabbit that I remember, or no, which, of course, people would say, oh, it's a reboot. No, it's really not, because everyone else really captured it well. I mean, in the second half of the movie, I don't know if this will be much of a spoiler, but you could kind of tell in the trailer, only some of the characters went to the real world. Mm-hmm. And they left four behind. I don't know if I want to mention names on this.
I wouldn't.
All right, we won't mention names on who was left.
Yeah, anyway, some of them come
to
try to save Christopher Robin, and some of them stay.
So the thing about this movie is, you know, you put Winnie the Pooh on it, which is fine. That'll obviously help people go and see it.
Yeah.
But I also believe this has been a movie that has been done before. We've seen this kind of story before. A young kid loves to play, blah, blah, blah. Grows up.
What I see, I've seen it compared almost unanimously to Hook. Everyone that talks about it talks about how it's similar to Hook. And it is. Like, thematically, it's very similar to the story that they told in Hook. And I think kind of like you were saying, it does have like Winnie the Pooh in it.
Yes.
But it's not necessarily like a Winnie the Pooh movie. It's more about the redemption of Christopher Robin and him kind of like reattaching to his, you know, childhood sense of wonder.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
So again, you know, it's kind of like it's this Christopher Robin is a Winnie the Pooh movie the way that Hook is a Peter Pan movie, more or less.
Yes, and you know, and I gotta actually, I will give Disney credit for this one. Instead of just saying Winnie the Pooh a movie, it's actually, you know, it is titled Christopher Robin because that's who it's really about, which I think they got it right on that one, because if they said this is a Winnie the Pooh movie, and then if Christopher Robin was just his regular side character, okay, that would make sense. But since this one is more of a coming-of-age thing, which we've seen this type of story many times before, this one, again, really is no exception. It didn't really do anything different than all these other movies had, but they did get a lot of the side characters right. Like, again, Pooh and Eeyore, I think, were the two top two stars.
Yeah.
Tigger, I would say, would probably be two, then Piglet, and then the rest of them. And obviously Rabbit was a little disappointing, especially because of the character he was in, you know, in the books and the show.
Which, I mean, time. If you read or watch Winnie the Pooh, that seems to be pretty much par for the course. I mean, you see, you know, these characters like Owl and Rabbit and Gopher show up, and they are part of the adventures. But, you know, they were always about, you know, Pooh and Piglet.
Yes.
And Eeyore seemed like a more, I guess, main character as far as they go, you know? And so it's like, I feel like the way they approached it in the movie was more or less how they always used to do it. And I didn't have a problem with that.
And, you know, obviously when people think Winnie the Pooh, you think of Pooh and Piglet. And then even Tigger thrown in there. But having Eeyore in the character he was, and I have to keep talking about this because I loved how it was done. How he
Eeyore
was
really good.
You know, it was okay with him being like that character. And Piglet, even in his scenes, he was done very well. Tigger in his scenes was done very well. But I think
that's another good point is like, so we were saying that like the voice changed with Rabbit, but it also seemed like his character changed a little bit.
That was a bit disappointing.
Piglet was very like obviously identifiably a different voice actor, but it still very much felt like Piglet.
It
did. The voice was a little bit different, but it still, the character was like on point. And I feel like the reason that I was a little bit weirded out by Rabbit was because it didn't feel quite like Rabbit to me.
That was the thing. And you know, I always talk about this, and actually just a quick side story without getting too far off a track is, you know, obviously I think a lot of us that also watch the show, or at least 98% of us grew up watching Pokemon.
Yeah.
And last November they released Pokemon, the movie I Choose You, which was a reboot of sorts of Ash starting his journey going through without Misty, blah, blah, blah. And you know, I went to go see it and it was enjoyable. Fast forward to May of this year, and I was at a convention where I met the wonderful Veronica Taylor, who was the original voice of Ash. And, you know, I told her, you know, I was like, oh, I saw the movie, I thought it was good, but it didn't have her voice. And the way that I kind of start seeing things is that a show or a movie could very well be very good, but if it's a changed voice actor for whatever reason, it loses some of that, at least to me, it loses some of that magic. It's almost like watching, just for example, an episode of SpongeBob, but without Tom Kenny voicing SpongeBob, the show, the episode might be good, might be funny, but it's going to lose a little bit of that spark and magic because it's not Tom Kenny voicing SpongeBob.
Yeah.
Much like how Veronica Taylor was not voicing Ash, especially in a reboot. And yeah, I know 4Kids is not really around anymore. They're the ones that did, you know, Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And then Cartoon Network took it. Now I believe it's on Disney XD with Sun and Moon. You know, I understand that in general I went through a lot of different voice actors. But for a movie like that, I would have loved to see, like, the original cast come back. And she did say she tried to.
Yeah.
She did try to. Her agents tried to. But, you know, I don't know if it was a money thing or an agent thing or a contract with the voice actress who does Ash now on the show. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But you know, having at least the mains, keeping a character together of who they were definitely helps. So
yeah.
Pooh was still Pooh, Tigger was still Tigger, Eeyore was still Eeyore, Kinga and Roo and Owl, you know, they were there. Obviously Rabbit's a little disappointing. Piglet, the voice was different, but Piglet's character was still the same. So
yeah.
In all, I think it was a good popcorn flick, you know. Definitely worth, like, maybe a red box or whatnot. You know, sit down and watch it with the kids. They'll get a kick out of it. It's a relaxing movie, I think.
And I think, so, Hook was not a well-reviewed movie.
No.
I think on last time I checked on Rotten Tomatoes, which was shortly before this movie came out, I think it sat around like 36% or something like that. Like, it's really not a well-reviewed movie at all. And this one's doing better than that, but, you know, it's still not, like, way up there. I think this one sits in, like, the 60s, or maybe right around 70,
yes.
if that. But it kind of, I think some people, they don't really grasp who the movie is for, and yes. kind of that it's a very whimsical movie. It kind of captures that childlike sense of wonder. And I think for some people, it just doesn't work. And I think part of the reason this movie didn't get reviewed well, and what I kept seeing in some of the reviews was like, it reminds me of Hook, and I didn't like it because it reminded me of Hook. And I feel like that seems like an unfair reason to downvote it. I thought it was a really solid movie. You know, like, you kind of have... you have to go in knowing what kind of movie you want. Because, you know, I don't want you to go in, you know, thinking it's going to be just another Winnie the Pooh movie and be disappointed by it. But I thought it was really good. The only other thing that I can think of that bugged me, and it's super minor, it's just like me being nitpicky now, but there were a handful of moments where Christopher Robin would hand things to Pooh, and you know, I didn't work, you know, I have no idea. I haven't read about this, and obviously I didn't work on the movie or anything, but what it looks like to me is happening is that Ewan McGregor didn't quite, it wasn't quite natural. Like, he would hand something to Pooh, but it didn't look like he was, like, handing him something. It looked like he was, like, putting something on a table.
Yeah,
there was, like, absolutely. There were, like, these weird, like, transitional things where, like, you could tell it was in Ewan McGregor's hand, but whenever it hit Winnie the Pooh's paw, it looked off. Like, something about the CGI of it, whenever he would put things in Pooh's hand, was just, like, weird. It didn't look right to me. And if it was once, I think it probably would have just, you know, I would have forgotten about it by the time the movie was over. But there's kind of a recurring thing where Christopher Robin has this thing that he's passing off to Pooh, and it happens like 3 or 4 times. And every single time it happened, I was like, no, that still doesn't look right.
No, it didn't
look right that time either. No, it still doesn't look right. And it happened like 3 or 4 times, and I was like, it's a weird thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, just to kind of wrap up my thoughts on it, to go kind of what you said of when it wasn't really trying to, it was trying to figure out who it was more towards. If I had to take a shot at the dark, I think it was more towards the adults being, you know, grown up, losing their way. Because, again, it was more centered around Christopher Robin growing up. So it really didn't hit for the kids. Where if it was just, a Winnie the Pooh thing with Christopher Robin in it.
Yeah.
You know, if it was an adventure where, say, Winnie the Pooh needs Christopher Robin's help to go to different areas to find his friends individually, okay, that I could see more being for the kids. I think this one was more for the adults, which, again, was good, but it's a story that we've seen so many times before, I think. Again, a solid popcorn flick. I gotta give it maybe a 6.5, maybe a 7 out of 10. Definitely worth to watch, you know, if you just want to kind of relax. You don't want anything high action, not like a Marvel or a scary movie type of deal. You know, just kind of put your feet up after a long day and, you know, get a couple chuckles here and there. That's what this movie really is to me.
I was thinking, from a filmmaking standpoint, I'd probably give it like a 6.5 or a 7. But just from a pure, like, enjoyment, just personal opinion standpoint, I was thinking I'd give it closer to an 8. Because I really love the message that it gets across. Especially just considering, I spend a lot of time working with kids.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
Like, you know, researching. I've done, you know, I've taken a lot of classes about, like, child psychology and the way your mind works as you grow up and things like that. And maybe, and you know, part of it's just me. You know, I still really enjoy, like, you know, the cartoons, the video games, the comic books, you know, the things that I enjoyed growing up.
Right.
And I feel like just the core message, not just behind Hook as well, but also behind Christopher Robin, really appeals to me. And I think at the end of the day, the message that the movie was trying to convey was more important to me than, like, the little nitpicky problems I had with it. So from a personal standpoint, I think I'd probably give it an 8, just because I think it's a really good movie to take to heart, even if it wasn't like the best, even if it wasn't necessarily conceived quite like I would have done it.
Yeah, and I can see where you're coming from with that, especially with you working with the kids all day. But for me, it's just because I've seen this story so many times before, and just because it had lovable characters like Winnie the Pooh and Piglin and Eeyore. You know, it didn't make that much of a difference. And good, don't get me wrong, it was a good movie.
Yeah.
It just was not as good as I think a Disney Winnie the Pooh Christopher Robin film could be. But
right.
I digress. So, that was a little bit longer than I thought it was going to be, but hey, that's good. We get to put some detail into it. You know, we actually kind of agreed, disagreed on some things on that one. So, I think we got to talk about some board games now.
Yes.
So, I'll let you go first, because you were doing Tragedy Looper, because you played that, I haven't, and then we can both kind of talk about the next one. So, you were playing that last night.
I was. I just played it yesterday. It was, I had never heard of it before last week. And basically what happened was, a couple of my brothers went to our local board game cafe, which I absolutely love that those are a thing.
I don't
go into ours as much as I'd like to, but I really admire that board games are becoming a big enough deal again that, you know, you're seeing these like board game cafes like popping up all over the place. I think that that's super cool. Mm-hmm. And I hope that, you know, they keep thriving the way they have. But anyway, ours opened up, what, a year ago? 2 years ago?
I want to say about a year, year and a half now.
It hasn't been here too long, but it's super cool. It was just a little over a year ago.
Okay.
Because my brother had gotten the annual pass, and his annual pass just expired like a couple months ago, if I remember right. I'll have to double check with him. And I know he listens, so he might correct us anyway.
It'll be in the comments below.
But I'm wanting to think that that's right. But anyway, point being, a couple of my brothers went over to our local game shop, Java Game House, and they didn't have anything in mind. They're like, let's go in, just see what game strikes us, and we'll try to play it. They found this game called Tragedy Looper and pulled it out, and they sat there looking at the game pieces and the rule book, which there are two rule books. It's kind of like if you've ever played like Betrayal at Baldur's Gate or Betrayal at House on the Hill or anything like that. You know, any of like the bigger games or kind of like the skirmish type games like Imperial Assault or Mansions of Madness, games like that, where you have like 2, 3, 4 manuals for different, you know, like rules and references and scenarios and things like that. It's got two different rule books, and they sat looking through the rule books and looking at the game pieces, and at the end of the day, they couldn't figure it out.
Of course.
It was a super complicated game, and they sat there just staring at stuff for like 2 hours and could not figure out for the life of them how to even play this game. So they ended up putting it back and playing something else. And then one of my brothers, Noah, he really liked the look of it and he liked the sound of it. So even though he couldn't figure out how to play there at the game house, he ordered it and watched a bunch of YouTube videos and basically got rules and references from other people. He watched like scenario guides and some gameplay from it and stuff like that to kind of get a feel for it. And he sat there, like, looking through the manuals and things and basically just spent the week getting the hang of the game so that he could teach us. So yesterday I went over there and he taught myself and my other brother, Jonathan, how to play Tragedy Looper.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, what it most reminds me of is a really complicated version of Clue.
Oh, all right.
Okay. So it's an anime... I think it might even be based on an actual anime, if I'm not mistaken.
It sounds familiar. Like, when you mentioned it earlier, when we put it on our list to talk about today, I don't know. I might do a little research on
that. I think it's based on an anime or a manga. I'll have to... We didn't do any research before doing the podcast, obviously. We're never prepared.
Mm-mm.
But if I remember right, I'm wanting to think Noah said it was based on an anime or something like that. But it's... The basic idea is that... You have story-driven campaigns. There are 4 boards, and there are different characters in different areas. So, like, one board is the school, one board is the city, one board is the hospital, so on and so forth. And there are different characters in each one.
Mm-hmm.
And they each have a role to play. So one of them is, like, a serial killer, and one of them is a conspiracy theorist, and one of them is your friend, and so on and so forth. but you don't know who's who. So it's a 3-versus-1 game where there's 2 or 3 players that play that are trying to like save everybody and solve the murder. And there's one person who plays as the mastermind, or, you know, dungeon master, or whatever you want to call it, whatever makes sense to you. In this game, it's the mastermind. And they are controlling the bad things that happen.
Okay.
They see who the killer is. They see who is supposed to die. And they're trying to make that happen. And we're trying to prevent it. If you lose, it's the reason it's called Tragedy Looper is when the tragedy happens, you loop back and you get a second chance to try to keep it from happening. But all along the way, you're trying to figure out, like I said, it's like Clue. You're basically, based on the movements that these characters make and the things that the mastermind is doing, you're trying to decide which character has which role and also how to prevent the murder from happening again. And
okay. So
where in Clue, it's like whenever you have an accusation, you would say, I think it's this person with this weapon in this room, and that would be the end of the game if you're right. In this game, once you've figured out the roles and the locations and things like that, your job is then to keep on preventing the murder until a certain number of days have passed. Mm-hmm. And so it adds like an extra layer of an extra challenge. Jonathan compared it to Stratego in that aspect.
I like Stratego.
You do?
I love Stratego.
He kind of compared it to Stratego in that aspect because there is a little bit of like management, because basically we all have decks of cards. Okay. Each player has a deck of cards, and the mastermind has like cards that they try to use to mess you up. So, you know, they'll try to move characters to a location where they can get killed, or try to move the killer to a location with a specific like key victim that has to die or something like that. Or they might add like paranoia to a victim, so they'll get more scared and might act more irrationally. And meanwhile, each player has a deck of cards that they can use to like reduce paranoia or move characters out of the way of danger and things like that. And so there's an aspect of like Stratego to it, but it's also a lot like Clue.
Mm-hmm.
But in this game, you know, it's like knowing who the killer and the victims are and stuff doesn't help you. I mean, it helps you, obviously, but knowing that isn't your key to success. It's just the first part. You also still have to, you know, work the characters around the board and reduce their paranoia and intrigue and stuff like that, so that the murders don't happen. Knowledge isn't your victory. It's just the first step to obtaining victory.
Okay.
And it's really complicated. It even after explaining it, it took me a couple of turns to kind of get into the vibe of it. But it was really good. It's really thematic. I like the theme of it a lot, and I like kind of that, like, you're working together, but you also have someone trying to screw you up. Because it's not just out of a book. You know, there are a lot of cooperative games like that where it's just like, you know, it's controlled by an app, or it's controlled by whatever your Dungeon Master's book says or something like that. And I really like that the mastermind is actually played by just one of your vindictive jerk friends. You know, someone who's sitting here at the cards trying to make you lose. And I like kind of that like 3-against-1 player aspect. So I think that's really solid, and I like the game. It's just challenging enough. It worked really well. We actually got it on our last day. If we had looped again, we would have lost.
Oh, wow.
And we got it on the last day of our last loop. We ended up winning. So it was really good for, like, a first play. So I think the challenge was good. The theme was good. The game is set up pretty well. The only thing I really don't like is that in Clue, they give you a bunch of papers mm-hmm. where you can mark off, you know, like, I think this might be the person, or I know this is not the person. You know, you can kind of start making sketches and notes and things like that to help you keep track of what's going on. This game gives you just enough papers for the players and nothing to mark off on.
Mm-hmm.
They give you, like, it's not like for you to sketch on. It's like a reference sheet of, like, these are your characters, these are your locations, this is, you know, the different plots and subplots you might be in the middle of right now, so on and so forth, but nothing to write on.
Mm.
And that's the one thing that bugged me, because I feel like in a game this complex, you really need something to keep track of, you know, okay, wait, who was our conspiracy theorist, or, you know, like, what happened last round that made us lose, like how did the killer get there, you know, so on and so forth.
Right.
And I think having some sort of like reference sheet or sketch pad or something included in the box would have gone a long way. And it's an easy workaround. We just pulled out like a composition book and wrote it down ourselves.
Right.
But I think having some sort of like themed, like I said, just some sort of like themed scratch pad or something, or like even just a list of characters where you can put, you know, with checkboxes by them or something, you know, to help you keep track of a player, would go a long way toward making the game even better. But at the end of the day, that was my only real complaint. I thought it was like, it's a super solid game. Once you kind of get the hang of it, it's just, like I said, there's a really heavy learning curve.
Okay.
You have to kind of sit down and learn it. And they've got like a tutorial. And I think we spent like 2 hours just playing the tutorial and then another couple hours actually playing the first game.
Okay.
So it is kind of a time investment, but if you kind of like that deeper complex strategy, it's super good. It's just you have to be fairly invested in the game, and you have to be with a group that's not afraid to really dig into this deep system.
And especially with you and your brothers, that's definitely a good group of people to get into
or
play with. So,
but no, if you're into that style of game and if you don't mind the heavy learning curve, I thought it was a really solid experience. You just kind of, you got to be prepared for it.
Yes. So, Trader Hooper sounds fun. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
It is a lot of fun.
Obviously something to sit down on maybe a stormy night to play, powers out.
Oh, and just if you're interested.
If you're interested.
If you're considering it, it comes with 10 different scenarios. It comes with 10 stories out of the box. And then it comes with expansions that add new stories and characters for, I think, like $20 a piece or something like that.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, you know, it's basically, and a lot of games do this now, you know, like Time Stories and things like that kind of have their own, like, deal, like, expansion packs, and, like, the living card games, like Arkham Horror and stuff, do it too. It's not unheard of. It's getting more and more common as games go on to release, like, expansions and things rather than just brand new games.
Mm-hmm.
But, That's another thing that I kind of liked about it, was that it's not too much of an investment up front, because I think the base box is only like $30 or $40.
That's not bad.
And then each expansion adds like, you know, 10 or 15 new scenarios for like $20. So that's another thing to keep in mind, is there are like scenarios that you play through. It's not just one of those that you can pull out any time. It's one of those where it's like you play it like the 10 times and then you're going to start repeating. So depending on which, if you play with the same group, once you've played it like 10 times, you've played through all the stories in the base box, but they do release pretty reasonably priced expansions as well that add a bunch of new scenarios and characters and tweaks to the gameplay and stuff. So there's a lot to keep it fresh over the long term too.
Outstanding. Well, you know what else is going to be fun for both of us? Kind of moving on to the next one.
Because
I actually know a lot about this one, or more.
Doctor Who.
Yes, exactly. Doctor Who and his TARDIS. No, we're going to talk about another board game. Because one thing I've always wanted to do is get more into board games. Obviously, you know, I don't know, I'm nowhere near the level of you and your brothers. But there is a new board game coming out.
That on Kickstarter.
On Kickstarter.
You can kickstart this right now.
You can.
We have both done it, and you can too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is called, and I quote, Power Rangers Heroes of the Grid. So, Power Rangers Heroes of the Grid was just announced probably about a week ago now, give or take. This is Sunday. We're filming on the last day of Power Morphicon, which is a biannually convention that happens in Anaheim, California. Usually, it's put on by one gentleman, and then Saban usually puts a little bit of money into it. And Bandai usually put a little bit, but now Hasbro owns Power Rangers, so it's kind of their way to show off like the new season. If you will, they show a new trailer of the new season. They show the main cast always kind of come out and surprise everybody on who's going to be your new Power Rangers. But this was shown off, and it is a big, ambitious board game. It is on Kickstarter, and I've got some facts here, if I may run down some facts. So it had a goal of $100,000 for Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
It was funded in under 8 hours mm-hmm. fully. So, I did a little bit of research, actually, because once in a while I'll do something. So,
and I had not planned this ahead.
No.
This was, I had seen this, like, right after it launched, before it even hit its goal, and I was like, ooh, not only does this look like a cool board game, but this looks like a cool board game that Mike and Haven might play with me.
And, oh, we're going to play this.
I was immediately sold on it, not just because I love board games, but because normally I end up, my game group is like my brothers. I play a lot with my brothers and I love doing that, but this is my way of kind of like getting my wife and one of my best friends into kind of my board gaming hobby.
You mix Power Rangers into it? We're good.
Yeah. And so I was thinking this might be kind of a good like entry point to like some of the deeper board games. Which Haven will get into them with me sometimes. I know Haven has played Legendary Encounters with me. We found one called Neverland's Legacy, which was basically the same thing, where it's like, not the same as Legendary, but it's the same idea as Power Rangers, where I saw that it was Neverland's, and I was like, Haven loves Peter Pan. Maybe she'll play this with me, because it's a board game about Peter Pan. And so we got that. But, you know, more often than not, Haven is very much like the traditional games. Mm-hmm. Like, when she wants to play a game, she pulls out, like, Monopoly or something like that. Whereas I like a lot of different kind of board game experiences, and so I was thinking this would, like I was saying, I think this is going to be a really good entry point for, like, you and Haven to get into more, like, kind of the complex board games with me.
Absolutely. And we will be streaming this. It has an anticipated release of July of next year, so a little bit of time to wait. But a few other facts.
If we're still friends and still doing a podcast kind of cool, in a year.
All that other kind of fun stuff. So as of Saturday night, so last night I did this to try to keep it as accurate. It has kickstarted over $218,000 already. Again, over a $100,000 goal.
Yeah.
There's over 1,100 backers, and there's still about 16 days to go. I know I wrote 17, but that was from yesterday. Mm-hmm. So the only thing I didn't write down, there's different versions of the game. Your basic one that I kickstarted was $75, and pretty much you're going to get the game for it. It says it's got a retail right around $90, which the more I look into it, the more I can see why.
There's a lot to it.
If
you've ever played any of like the big skirmish games, like I know I mentioned them earlier, but games like Mansions of Madness or Imperial Assault, or even like Gloomhaven. Gloomhaven was selling for like $200 last year, and I got super lucky and I was able to buy it at retail for like $150, which is what they want to sell it for.
Right.
But you know, games like that, they come in these like massive boxes and they're full of like little miniatures and extra board boxes and things like that. Like there's so much material in this box that Absolutely. It's like they have to sell it for a bigger cost or they're going to start losing money, making all these like tiny pieces for this game. And so, considering you're able to get it for a discount by getting it on Kickstarter, it's definitely worth doing that if you're interested in board games or Power Rangers, because it's only going to go up from there once it goes into, like, mass production.
So, for me, you know, just to start out, I just did the $75 one, which I'm sure I'll get more things for it later. The big one, I believe, was $240 was the max. That was the max, and then there was a $300 one. But that's if you, like, own a board game shop, or I didn't read all the details on that one.
Yeah, there was a really big one, and it was basically, like, it wasn't even, like, you bought, a couple copies. Basically, what they said was, if you're a game company, like, if you own a board game shop or you sell them in mass, like, online or something, you can back us at the $300 level, and that $300 is, like, your down payment.
Yes.
And we'll make a special deal by selling you, like, a whole bunch of them, but $300 is, like, our, you know, your, like, goodwill payment.
Absolutely.
Saying that you want a whole bunch of copies, and we'll figure out the rest of the payment later on after the Kickstarter.
Yes, so I'm looking forward to this one, obviously, because first of all, it's Power Rangers. And, you know, looking at some of the figures and pieces, they're not just little plastic, you know, or like the little cardboard cutouts. They're actually all individual, all five Rangers.
Maybe.
Okay,
so the one caveat here is that my understanding is the game is, it has been licensed, it has been approved by whatever powers that be that need to approve a board game of Power Rangers, but the artwork and the characters that they're using are still subject to license or approval.
Mm.
So the miniatures and the cards and the boards and things that you see might still change as time goes on, depending on if the artist doing them can get the approval to
absolutely
have those. And you'll see it on the Kickstarter when you look at it. You know, they show pictures of the board and it says, you know, like, subject to license or approval. And then you see pictures of the miniatures and it says license or approval and so on and so forth.
But I think really with me, what the biggest thing I like about it is that regardless what happens with that, is they're trying to put individuality into all the characters and pieces.
Yeah.
It's not just your normal tough guy just standing there in the pose, and then having him, you know, red, blue, black, pink, and yellow.
Yeah.
You know, they're all different poses. Like, the mock-up that we saw was them holding their power weapons. You know, Kimberly had her power bow, Jason had the power sword. So, to me, and that's little details. It's awesome.
And one of the higher backing points was actually alternate poses. They send you, like, extra figures with, like, the Power Rangers in alternate poses, so you can have one where they're, like, in, like, a punch mode or, I don't know, karate mode or whatever it is.
And then action poses.
Yeah, like, action poses, and then there's another one of weapons or something like that, you know, so... So that's pretty cool, too, that it's not even that, like, each character's individualized, but each character might have a few different individualized options, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. So... it's being shown off at Power Morphicon right now. There's been a couple demo copies out. I saw people playing it, which, to me, I'm excited. I have to wait a year, but next year, actually, I got two big things coming. I have this, and then, I don't know if we talked about it in a previous podcast, but First Four Figures is putting out a Banjo-Kazooie statue, so I have that ordered. I think that comes out right around the same time, so big money all at the same time coming out of the paychecks, but hey.
And that's, if you're into board games, if you kind of have a working knowledge of board games... It looks to me more or less kind of like a legendary style game. There's like, it's a deck building aspect where you build like your enemy decks and your hero decks. And then as you flip the enemies, you place them on the board. So it uses more miniatures. Where legendary is completely card based, it looks like in Heroes of the Grid, you have a deck of like enemy cards, but whenever you flip over an enemy card, you place the miniatures for those enemy cards on the board. So it might say like, you know, Putty Patrollers 3, and you would place 3 Putty Patrollers on the location indicated or something like that. But as far as like combat and recruitment and things like that, it looks like it works more or less like legendary. And I'll get back to you more about that as they get back to us more.
Yes.
Because they've been posting pretty much daily.
Yes, you know,
because, you know, it's only been up a few days, and I backed it, like I said, probably within a couple hours of it going up. And I've already gotten, like, 4 updates, and each one is just new rules. Like, as they go, they're like, okay, today we're going to talk about combat. Today we're going to talk about enemies. Today we're going to talk about the miniatures. And so... they keep releasing new details about like the gameplay and how the game works and like the size of the setup and things like that. So right now my main impression is legendary, but like with miniatures, but as time goes on, we can update you guys on that.
Yes. I'm very much looking forward to jumping into this game, especially being Power. So
yeah.
We'll keep you guys updated on more as more happens. Maybe, you know, if they get it done earlier, they can send it out earlier. And of course, as soon as we get it, we'll try to live stream it.
Mm-hmm.
So, moving on, I just want to talk about this one real quick.
Okay.
Just for 2 seconds, because one good thing you actually have, I mean, outside of going and having fun, I'm going to talk about Walker Stalker Con real quick. And so, I went there just with the intention of meeting one person. I learned to meet Kara Payton, because he's my second favorite Walking Dead character. Carol's my favorite. But one thing I noticed is that, obviously, it's either you have them all here, there's pop figures for pretty much every Walking Dead character, or almost all of them, at least, I should say.
To clarify, I don't have the Walking Dead characters.
No, he doesn't.
He was pointing at my pops up here, but I don't have the Walking Dead pops.
Nino Kuni, we got Yu-Gi-Oh, you know, all the ones.
Yeah.
So, when I was there, I only brought my King Ezekiel pop, because that's the only one I wanted to get signed. So after, you know, I go there, I get in line. That's the first thing I do. When I go to a convention, I go get the autographs I want before I start walking around, so at least I can get the main thing out of the way. So, when I was leaving the area, and I was walking around, I looked over, and Chandler Riggs, who does Carl, was there, and he had, like, no line. Apparently, you know, he got through his line, and everything was good. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I mean, I'm going to spoil this one, because it's been a while now. It's kind of like if we talk about Avengers, you should already know. In the show, he was bit, so he's dead. And there's no coming back from that. He's gone. So I was like, all right, let me go ahead and try to get his autograph now. Which
that's basically what happened in Infinity War too.
Pretty much. So
they all got bit and died.
They all got bit and died. So I was like, let me go ahead and get him. And with him, I think he's kind of also going to be like a Daniel Radcliffe with no matter what else he does, because he started on the show so young, people are going to remember him as Carl Grimes.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I want to go. I'll get his autograph. So I'm walking around, and I found a two-pack of his pop with Negan in it. And I was like, screw it. Let me just get this one. It was only $8 more. So I'm like, all right, you know, because I think it was a Books A Million exclusive. The sticker said $21.99, but the person that sold it wanted was asking $30. All right, fine, get a double pack. And then later on, I saw Jesus, Thomas Paine, again with no line. I was like, oh, I like Jesus too. I ran and I grabbed his pop for $10. So the thing is that I really liked about this, and that I'm hoping to see more conventions do this, is that these vendors that are there, they did not charge more for a certain product of the character that's already there. You know, pop figures are normally between $9 and $12. So when I was able to go and buy a Jesus pop for $10, fully knowing that Jesus is there, I thought that was great, because I've been to some other conventions where people would literally have a toy or a figure with a price on it, and then they'll have another sticky note on it that says, get me signed, you know, because that particular character was there, and they'd also bump up the price a little bit on it.
Yeah.
So I have to give Walker StalkerCon and the vendors there, like, a billion shout-outs, because they did not try to take advantage of people like me, who are like, screw it, I want to get a physical item signed, which, of course, you can also still go there, and more than not, you know, 99.9% of the time, a lot of these actors and actresses are going to have regular pictures, multiple pictures, you get to choose one, they sign right. that. So that's neither here nor there, but for me, I prefer getting my pop figure signed. I just love how to display them. I put them in the case, put them on my shelf, boom, done.
Yeah.
So I really like that these shows, or at least Walker Stalker, they did not, you know, even by $5, they could have easily put $15 on, like, the single pops of Jesus. And I did find some single Carls later, but I do plan on hopefully meeting Jeffrey Dean Morgan next month. So I was happy to have that two-pack, but they could have easily put $15 on it, made a few more bucks. But they didn't. They put $10 on it. I thought that was great. So big shout-out to Walker Stalker Con in Orlando for that. And that's really all I wanted to say about that one. It was all a good right. time. I loved it. So I know you weren't there. I know you're not. You're kind of back in The Walking Dead.
I don't have a problem with The Walking Dead. I just kind of fell behind on it. I had gotten into the comics for a while, and I got into the TV show for a while. And then probably around, like, season 5 of the TV show, I kind of just dropped off the bandwagon altogether. Yeah. I stopped reading and I stopped watching. And
now, I mean, I'm still digging into it.
Yeah.
So, moving on. The last topic we have today, and this one hopefully will go kind of quick. I just want to talk about the retro game market real quick. Because obviously, as Tyler mentioned earlier, I might have mentioned a few times, or people that know me know, I buy and sell games, toys, cards, mobile. Slowly, and I mean slowly, I think the market is starting to taper off a little bit. And I'm going to start with the original Nintendo games. Original Nintendo games now, at least common ones, are kind of dropping to the point where maybe they're getting to Atari stages, molassesly slow. Whereas when I find Atari games, unless it's something super rare, a lot of them are down to like $1 a game. And I've seen a lot of common NES games down to $1 or $2 a game, it shows.
And I think, at least personally, I attribute a lot of that to how easy it is to make emulation consoles now.
That is definitely a part of it.
I think a really big part is, especially with the Raspberry Pis. The Retro Pi is like a huge deal now. Yes. We had people at the toy show we were at last weekend. We had people coming up just asking if we sold Retro Pis, yes. if we would make them and sell them to them. Which, I mean, we don't do because of the sketchy legality of emulators and ROMs.
Yeah, just sell
the chips. But that's a thing now. That's just, absolutely. You know, people want to know if they can buy. And, you know, they're even releasing them now. Nintendo's releasing official NES minis, Super NES minis, yep. things like that. So it's like the market for them is dropping off as people are relying less and less on the old physical hardware and thinking they can just, you know, go pay $50 for a Pi or one of the retro consoles or something.
And not only just that, you know, Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64 are still really, really big right now. But one thing that I've noticed that is starting to trickle out a little more. I would say probably over the past 3-4 months, I've seen more and more of this at least get higher end. Maybe we'll say 6 months. So, is that our friends over in China are now just not producing the fake Pokemon games, which have been running rampant wherever. They're getting more into producing actual, they're doing Smash Brothers 64, they're doing, you know, Mega Man X 1, 2, and 3 on Super Nintendo, which in turn, if you go on eBay now, you can buy a, really a knockoff, which is illegal, by the way, eBay, for $25 in free shipping of Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
So if you have someone that just says, I just want to play the game, you know, they're going to go and buy this $25 copy, plays most likely exactly the same, rather than come to someone like me who's got a legit copy for, you know, $40, mm-hmm. whatever it is. So in turn, I've lowered a lot of my prices on things. And first of all, since I don't have a lot of overhead, you know, I don't have a storefront. I don't really, I have you as an employee.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't have to pay insurance or anything, is that I lower my prices to kind of keep with it. But I also explain to people, it's like, look, mine are legit 100% items. I do not sell knockoffs. I do not sell fakes. I turn away from it. I will not buy it. You know, straight across the board, I will not do it.
And we actually just had a couple that we turned down because Mike handed me a big old box of Pokemon games that I just need the batteries all swapped out. And there were a couple of them that I cracked open and they were just modded chips.
Yes.
Somebody had taken like, you know, I think it was Fire Red and Leaf Green.
Yep.
They'd taken Fire Red and Leaf Green, cracked open the cases, and put in their own chips that still play, like Pokemon is still on them and you can still use them, but the game saving doesn't work. And they don't have a battery.
Yeah.
Instead of using a battery, they use solid state technology like you would find in like newer computers and things. So you plug them in and the batteries aren't supposed to go dead. But they didn't have the correct mod chip in there to save data on, so it couldn't do either one of those. The Game Boy and the chip in these knockoff cartridges were not formatted correctly to be compatible. So you could play the game, but you could never save the game. And I can't just add a battery to that.
There's no spot for it.
Yeah, there's no slot for it on these new chips.
Where the chips are is where the battery goes in a legit one. And, you know, in the Pokemon games, a lot of people know that there are easy ways to tell. You look at the sticker on the front. You kind of put it in the light. There's going to be, like, a little indented number in there. Look at the font of it. Look mm-hmm. at, you know, where it says the official Nintendo seal of quality on there. So there are ways to tell if it is fake or not. And it's the same thing with the new games coming out. You know, if you look at the sticker, you know, how glossy is it? How new does it look? Unfortunately, they don't say reproduction on there anymore, which again is illegal eBay. But that's just kind of what's running rampant right now. And I think if this continues, you know, gaming's never going to die. Gaming is still huge, regardless if it's people playing on the computer or whatever. But it's definitely going to, you know, put a halt-ish on people like me, what I do. And that's ultimately why I decided a year or two ago, like, I'm not going to worry about doing a physical game store that I've always wanted. Not because we can't do it, but because it just, with what's going on in the world right now, is that it's
impossible to maintain. I think it's a miracle. We've got, I think, one really good retro game shop still open in our area. And even that one, it's a good, 30-40 minute drive?
It is.
Video Game Rescue?
It is.
And that one, I'm honestly a little bit surprised that they've been able to stay open as long as they have.
Well, they've stayed open as long as they have because, well, they have an arcade in there, too. They've got a full arcade. Not just talking 3 or 4 machines. They've got a whole back room full of them.
Yeah.
Plus, a lot of these places that are doing this now, and especially if you walk into GameStops now, they're essentially like a Think Geek or a Hot Topic. Mm-hmm. They've got shirts, lanyards, toys. I mean, you know, Toys R Us closing, you know, GameStop really should capitalize on it.
I'm always shocked. Like, because, you know, I remember when you used to go into GameStop to, like, get a game. And now it's like you go into GameStop and it's like half of the store is games and the other half is, like, merch and just, like, geeky media.
And a lot of it, too, like, you know, a lot of GameStops are somewhat built the same way. Obviously, some locations are bigger than others, you know, even, say, compared to a mall store. But one thing I've noticed is that, at least the main one that we go to, you walk in, and right on the left, pretty much down almost a little more than halfway, is all merch.
Yeah, probably about 2/3 of the left-hand side is all merch. Toys, and then pops. On the end, it's like the Xbox One or something like that.
Xbox One, and then right on the back wall is PS4. And then on a gondola, like a little gondola, that's where they have like Wii and Wii U. They've got a PS3 and 360, just all on a gondola, not even on the wall. And then on the right hand side, which a lot of this does come down to marketing as well, is on the right hand side of the store is where all the Nintendo stuff is, the 3DS yeah. stuff, the Switch stuff.
And that's their like only their only like really impressive. I mean, the merch is cool and stuff, but as far as actual video games, it's mostly dominated by Nintendo now.
It really is.
Because in the middle, you've got their big old, you know, like checkout counter and their line and stuff. And then on one side, from the checkout counter to the wall is Switch. The other side of the checkout counter to the wall is like 3DS.
Yes.
And then over, you know, like we were saying, on like in like one corner, this one like tight little corner, like maybe the size of this room, they've got like Xbox One and PS4 and their old stuff.
So the times have definitely changed with that, which honestly for me, even honestly, I've gotten more into a little bit more of the toy collecting than gaming. You know, I still play, but not nearly as much as I used to. But I go to GameStop now, and I mean, I'll look at my, you know, I have the app and what I've pre-ordered, couple games here and there, but a lot of them are pops. A lot of it is like the Power Ranger Legacy figures, Dragon Ball, Bandai's putting out Dragon Ball, Dragon Star, like essentially Legacy figures. And that is dominated by what I have reserved there, because at least I know I'm going to get it. And without a Toys R Us around where you can go in and it's just, you know, show up and it could be there, you know, I'm going to GameStop now, not to really buy a whole bunch of games, you know, a couple here and there, but just to get my toys, just to get the pops that I want, and, you know, which is fine, you know, I'm still doing business and everything, but, you know, a lot of game stores, not even just here that I've noticed, are also trying to get into that aspect as well, because I don't think they can just focus on games anymore to me, and, you know, I could be wrong, there are still probably some game stores out there that's like, yeah, we just have games and that's it, and they're doing well, but a lot of them now do have this extra stuff that try to bring people in. That'll be like, hey, I want you, just for example, let me buy Kingdom Hearts on PS4. And, oh, look, here's a Sora, a Goofy, and a Donald pop. Let me add those too. You know, they get that extra little bit of sales on top of it. So that's really where the retro game market is now, as well as a little bit of the modern. But just seeing so many fakes run rampant, you know, I still enjoy what I'm going to do. And,
yeah,
you know, I'm going to keep doing it just because, you know, I... First of all, I enjoy it, and I get to make a little bit of money on it, so why not?
Yeah.
But, you know, slowly but surely, I don't want to say, oh, in 5 years it's going to be back to what it was, where people were going to flea markets or whatnot, and for $20 they walked out with a giant bag, a garbage bag full of games. I don't think we're going to go back to that aspect, but I think we're going to start seeing, at least with the, what I like to call common rares. Like, you'll see... For NES, at least, like Super Mario Brothers 3 and 2, Contra, stuff like that, those are quote-unquote rare right now, but that's because so many people haven't want to keep it.
Yeah.
Contra is a million seller. Even something like Super Mario 64, which is selling now for like $30-$35, that's a million seller. There's at least a million copies out there, you know? So... It will drop eventually, you know. Even Mario Brothers 3 right now, I've been seeing back under the $10 mark.
Yeah.
I've seen it as high as $20-$25. I've seen it go as low as $6-$7 now.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is because it is happening, you know, at least with Nintendo. And that's not going to say you're going to go out there and find the super rare ones like Bubble Bobble Part 2 or Little Samson or even really obscure ones like Hot Slots. You're not going to go out there and find those for, you know, super cheap again.
Not legit copies of
those. Yes, of course. But you are definitely going to start seeing, I think, you're going to start seeing them, you know, maybe not the Marios right away, but you're going to start seeing a lot more of the commons. People like, oh yeah, $3 each, $4 each. And pick, in which, you know, commons are commons, but there could still be some really good ones in there.
Yeah.
Like Striker, I believe, is one of my favorite ones on the NES. And it's like a $5 game, if that. That might be on the high end.
Yeah.
So with that, that's kind of my thoughts on the retro game market right now. You know, I'm sure we'll revisit this in a few months if more has changed. But that's really all I had, unless you had anything you want to add to the retro game market.
Not necessarily.
All right, so guys, I think that's our show.
I got really lucky because the stuff that I'm normally my kind of like childhood consoles and the ones that I'm really drawn to, well, I guess Xbox doesn't really count as, like, a childhood console. I was old enough at that point, but, like...
Yeah, I was 11, 12, so...
The ones that I loved growing up, like Dreamcast and Xbox and stuff like that, right. I kind of got lucky because some of my favorite games and some of my favorite consoles were not, like, the super popular ones.
Yes.
So, it's like, you know, like Mike, I'm doing a few more games for him, a couple more battery replacements and things like that, and he said he'd just pass off an original Xbox to me. Because, like, they're so cheap that it's, like... That's already equivalent, you know? You sell them for what? I see them for like $30. $30, $35.
$25. I'll even throw an extra controller.
Yeah.
You know, but that doesn't mean, again, it doesn't mean that it's a bad console. It's just not caught up to what people are looking for yet. When, you know, a lot of people are looking at Nintendo stuff. They want to go back to it. So, and that's why, you know, Nintendo's putting out the NES Classic, the Super NES Classic. You know, and people are like, well, I don't need to go and buy a $40, $50 console with a bunch of $10 games.
Yeah.
Because they're getting a lot of the rarer ones, again, right there, right in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So people, and honestly, I'm not going to lie, I kind of did the same thing. I sold off a lot of my collection, you know, pay off some bills and whatnot, because adulting sucks.
Yeah.
But I have an NES and a Super NES Classic, so I've got it right there. And
yeah.
I hear more and more stories all the time about people... collectors that are just letting go of their collections, you know, just taking up too much room, or, you know, and it kind of happened with me when I got hardcore into collecting. Like, I just bought everything. It's like, oh, I'm just gonna go for this, go for that.
Oh yeah.
And
I think we both did that for a
while.
We did.
And then
I don't know about you. I know I originally, whenever I went and sold off my collection.
Yes.
I hit up the store I was talking about earlier, Video Game Rescue, and they ended up hitting their limit. I got to a point where they were pulling stuff out of boxes, and they're like, we've already hit our cash limit for the day, so you're going to have to come back tomorrow if you want to trade in more things.
Yeah.
And they ended up giving me, like, $500 that day, and then almost another $500 the next day.
Absolutely.
Just in, like, old consoles and old games and things.
Yeah.
And I'm going to seem a little hypocritical here. I'm justifying myself, but... Even like I'm instead of doing the before they announced like the NES Classic and stuff, I went ahead and made myself a RetroPie,
right.
And I just hold on to the games that I still play. And I think, you know, that's the only way. That's kind of your like gray area around like the legality of it, is they ask you to make sure that, you know, you still have a physical copy of the game you're playing, that you're not just like pirating games. So it's like, you know, I still have, I think.
Hiding down there, honey.
It's either behind me or over here, like in the corner. I've got a box of like just old Nintendo and Genesis games and stuff like that, just so I can add them to my RetroPie without having to feel bad about it. But it's like, I built it for, I think, $40.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it right after I sold everything. I sold my whole collection for like almost $1,000 and then just paid like $40 of that $1,000 to build myself a little retro console with all the games that I wanted to keep playing.
And honestly, again, it goes the same for me. I didn't do anything with the RetroPie, but for me growing up, you know, born in 1990, I played some of my sister's Nintendo. You know, I had no idea what I was doing. I had fun. We never had a Super Nintendo in Genesis era because a little thing called Power Rangers was out, and that's Christmas and birthday. That's... I'd get the Toys R Us big book of toys that literally was a big book of toys, and not the little stupid shit that they started doing before they closed, rest in peace. And, you know, all I wanted was Power Rangers stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then one year for Christmas, I think it was 97 or 98, I don't remember when, we got a Nintendo 64. So that was really the first console I had that I really enjoyed and played. Obviously, Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, Pokemon Stadium 1 and 2. One of my favorite racing games, F1 Zero Grand Prix, I played the crap out of that one. So I still keep those, because those were like the games I truly remember playing. And then I still have a few Nintendo games left that I enjoy, like the Turtles games and everything. But
mm-hmm.
I think that also kind of played a part in it too with me, is that I was so laser beam focused on what I want to collect, what did I play. And I did the same thing with the Pops. Like, you know, I recently actually got rid of more Pops. And, you know, I used to have like two or three shelves full of them. Now I'm down to maybe 1.25, give or take. But I'm only going for the certain ones that I know. Like, you know, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Ones, the four over here. Blue Eyes, Dark Magician, Girl Kaiba, and Yu-Gi just came out, so I have those. Target just released a Pikachu exclusive. I have that one.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then also, I believe either coming later this month or early next month, is there's a couple Digimon ones, Taimat, Abu, and Agabumon. And then what I used to do, and I know this is somewhat off topic, but kind of goes the same thing, is that when a Marvel movie would come out, I would get a couple from the Marvel movies. And I was like, this is going to be too much. I don't want to keep doing this. So coming this year, I think some of them actually come out in next week or maybe even a couple days, they're releasing the 10-year anniversary like Chrome ones. Gold Chrome. They're not actual, or they're not every single character, but you're going to have Iron Man, Captain America, Spider-Man, Loki, like the main cast.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll pick those up just to show support, but I don't need to, say, for Infinity War, go out and buy every single one of the pops that come type of thing. And it was the same thing with the game. So really, it's going to be a change over the next couple of years. I'm very interested to see what will happen as more people kind of realize or say, okay, you know, I like playing games, but I don't need to buy these super high-end expensive ones anymore because of all the other options that are out there, as well as our friends in China selling illegal fake stuff. But that's just me. So really, that's all I had. I don't know if there's anything else you want to add, or we go ahead and wrap up for today.
I think we're all set. All
right, guys. So thank you so much for watching. I think it's episode 8 that we just did. 8 or 9?
Yes, 8.
8, okay. Well, clearly it shows how much I know what I'm talking about. So, guys, thank you again so much. Oh, always, as always, if you have questions, please leave them on Facebook or Instagram, Twitter, YouTube.
We love answering questions, and we love interacting with, you know, fans or haters or whatever you might be doing listening to us.
They might be our trolls, but they'll defend us.
So please, please, if you're listening and you have anything that you'd like to ask us, whether it be intelligent or not,
we'll answer it.
Yeah, we will answer pretty much anything you'd like to ask us.
Absolutely. So, guys, thank you again so much for watching. We'll be back in about 2 weeks for another episode. And, yeah, that's all I got. So, all right. See you guys later.
See ya.
I did well. You started it.